That makes me know that we had the right idea in the beginning, and we just need to maintain our focus and elevate. We update our formulas. We have certain formulas, but we update them with the times and everything, you know. And so.
Hello, my basketball friends, and welcome to the Teardrop Runners, the weekly show where four old friends try to learn and or teach each other something about basketball analytics. I'm your host in Baltimore, Scott, a.k.a. The Walnut, and with us, as always, are...
MRB out in Brooklyn.
And Big Shot Rob up in Manhattan. How you doing, fellas?
I'm doing good. Of course, we're sad that our fourth member couldn't be with us tonight. Chris Brown's computer has been hacked. All assumptions are and indications that it's the Chinese military, and there is a full investigation underway. But we're going to have to soldier on without him because that's what he would have wanted.
Yes, indeed.
That might be true.
These colors don't run, gentlemen. All right, guys. Well, since we are a basketball nerd podcast, we're not going to spend this first few minutes talking about the snooze fest of NBA All-Star Weekend. We're going to get right into the snooze fest that is the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. None of us are quite savvy enough to plan ahead to go to this. But we're kind of following what papers are being presented and what are the big topics going on in NBA analytics. So we each picked a paper that's currently posted. We're going to give you a little preview of it today. And then next week, after having read it and kind of tried to crunch some numbers for those of us that can, we'll check back. Menzel, what article are you interested in?
Sure. The one that caught my eye right away was called To Crash or Not to Crash, a quantitative look at the relationship between offensive rebounding and transition defense in the NBA. This is something we've talked about before, mostly anecdotally about how the Celtics always get back and so forth. But what these people did, a bunch of graduate students from MIT, is to use something called Sports View, which is a camera-based system which tracks the location of players in real time on the court and then provides that as data. So what they were able to do is whenever a jump shot went up, and for this study they only used jump shots between 15 and I think 30 feet, they coded the location of every player on the floor, whether they are in the rebounding area or if they're too far from the rebounding area and if they're in between, and then measured what those people did. So they came up with something called a crash index and a retreat index.
I have to admit, Menzel, I was a little disappointed not to learn that this was an indictment of the fact that Crash won the best picture in whatever year that came out. This does sound interesting, and obviously it's more appropriate now that you explain it. It's a basketball podcast. But I do think there needs to be a paper about why Crash won best picture that year. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that paper exists.
It probably does.
Recently. I can say.
Anyhow, getting back to some things we care about. Like
right,
basketball.
I apologize. I just got Oscar fever.
What they did
fever,
is they looked for players in what you would call the mid-range area. So basically more than 8 feet from the basket and not too far outside the three-point line, and determined whether they went towards the basket, and I think the threshold they used was 5 feet, or retreated, went away from the basket.
So what's the question that they're trying to answer here?
So the question is it worth it to crash the boards? So there's a few elements to that question. So one, does your transition defense suffer when you crash the boards and don't get the rebound? And what is the impact of sending additional rebounders to the glass to get the rebound?
And unfortunately, listeners, you have one of two choices. You can either read this, which is obviously a mistake, or tune in next week when Menzel's going to answer these questions for you.
Well, you know, they did answer this question for us in the paper. I don't know if you want me to hold it.
I do. I mean, we've got to keep our listeners guessing. Have you seen the movie Cliffhanger?
No,
yeah, me neither, but I assume it ends with a cliffhanger based on the name. So what am I going to see, a Sylvester Stallone movie about climbing? No, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Rob, what paper are you going to be reading?
I'm going to be going with Live by the Three, Die by the Three, The Price of Risk in the NBA.
That was always the expression I heard, and I think I remember hearing it, especially most recently when the Orlando was going to the finals in 2009.
Yeah.
So what's the idea here?
Well, the idea, it's a little different than just shooting the three all the time. It's a little, this is, this goes through risk in the sense that, you know, when you're losing by a lot of points, is it worth it to maximize risk or value risk in the sense where you take more threes or not? And they use data for the last 5 years and used a little game theory, which was my favorite class in college. So,
can you explain what game theory is? It's not about the rapper of the game.
Oh man,
I do have some theories about that guy though, if you guys want to hear him. But
wasn't he on singles?
Was he?
He was.
Well, you know, don't call him game for nothing. Rob, getting back to game theory, can you give our listeners a brief kind of summary of what you mean by game theory?
Sure. It's basically the study of decision making. So it uses like models that tells you whether or not you are making the right decision strategically. And it's mostly addressed in the sense that, you know, in this particular case, it's basically saying, you know, because the team is down by 20 points, they're going to start taking more threes. And when they're down by 20 points, is this a strategic, you know, route to go?
And so the question is, can you shoot yourself back into the game from beyond the arc?
Exactly.
And guess what, listeners? You can do this the easy way or the hard way. You can either read the article, that's obviously the hard way, or you can listen to Rob answer this question next week, which is not just the easy way. It's, as Wilford Brimley would say, the right thing to do and the right way to do it.
Yes, sir.
Have you already read the paper, Rob?
No, I have not.
Me neither. What about you, Menzel? Did you read your paper?
Absolutely.
Okay, now when you say read, you mean skim, right?
No, I read the paper.
Man. That's a four-page paper, man.
Yeah, this is grad student work. This is done for me.
No problem. You can grade this in your sleep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you want to give us any other preview from your crash or not to crash article then? Since you've read it, I mean, I can't claim to have that level of insight in the thing I'm about to talk about.
Well, I can tell you this.
Please do.
As they find and make a point of, missing shots is bad for your offense.
Wow. That's unbelievable. Yeah. There's got to be a name for that.
All right. Yeah, that might be new knowledge. It's new for me.
I don't believe you.
Well, you know, Rob, you can read the paper at www.sloansportsconference.com/WP-content/uploads, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just Google it. It's pretty easy. The paper I'm going to be reading this week is called The Dwight Effect. I'm reading it not because I want to read more about the Lakers or Dwight Howard, but because it's written by the great Kirk Goldsberry, and I love his pretty pictures. So what he's done is he's trying to use a sort of combination of defensive analytics and sort of visualization of those analytics to determine who's a good defender and how we can tell. So the paper says that it's essentially out to answer two questions. And, of course, I'm going to give you the answer right after I give you the questions, no problem. The first question is, who's the best interior defender in the NBA? And, by the way, the article's called The Dwight Effect. but, like I said, I haven't read it yet. And what metrics would you use to answer that question? So Rob says Tyson Chandler. The article is called The Dwight Effect, but I'll tell you what Kirk has to say if you tune in next week, or you could always choose the hard way.
I'm noticing a pattern with the way Goldsberry titles his articles after I read Who is the King of the Kobe Pass. Mm-hmm.
He understands that this he went to the Bill Simmons School of Naming Things, and he understands that you got to attach a good name to any theory you have.
This was, I think, the 20th anniversary of the Ewing Theory. Is that right?
The Ewing Theory. It's true, actually. They found that if you say, ooh, right as the guy shoots the ball, that he's 15% less likely to make it.
Don't make fun of my accent.
That is actually the Queen's English official Pacific Northwest style. But is it the 20th anniversary of the Ewing Theory?
Maybe 15.
Has Bill Simmons written a column claiming that the Celtics' winning streak represents a manifestation of the Ewing Theory?
You better believe it.
I told my friend Boston Chris, who I hope to have on the show someday, that I thought that would happen. But he says that it wouldn't really count as the Ewing Theory because he's already had a championship with them, and he's really not considered the man on the team until maybe this season. What do you guys think? Is a Ewing potential or not?
I think that standard is a little bit too strict. You know, he's the best player on the team. They lost him. They started winning higher rate than they did before. To me, that's all that matters. It should count.
And for those that don't know, in a nutshell, the Ewing theory, or the Ewing theory, as Manziel likes to say, is based on the idea that sometimes when a player loses one of its superstars or its primary star, it can essentially lead to the team's success that season or the following season. And the examples, of course, are endless. And it's something he's been tracking, I guess, for 20 years. It's hard to believe.
That's interesting.
It sure is, Rob. You know, thanks for saying that. I couldn't agree more.
There's so many different examples are going through my head right now.
Give me a few. Give me a few. What? Alex Rodriguez is a primary example.
Yep.
So
number one.
Those of us from Seattle, of course, know that Alex Rodriguez stabbed the city of Seattle in the back. Just kidding. I don't really care. And signed a huge contract with the Rangers. And the next season, the Mariners won 116 games behind the roided up forearms of Brett Boone.
Brett Boone. And then lost in the playoffs, don't worry.
Yeah. The only time I ever didn't leave a server a tip, because right as I was paying my bill at this bar, somebody on the Yankees hit a home run, he celebrated, and I wrote an obscenity in the line where the tip went. So I'd like to apologize to that bartender somewhere in the northwest part of Washington, D.C., where I was in 2001 when that happened.
I'm sure he'd make that trade.
Yeah, I'm sure he longs for those days. All right, well, guys, it's the middle of the season, and so it's our chance to kind of take stock of what's been happening in the first half. And one of the things I'd like to talk about is regression to the mean. That is, guys or teams that are at a pace that seems unlikely to continue for the rest of the season. We're calling this section Mean Boys. And
Mean Boys.
Yeah, just
mean
imagine
boys.
A reggae song playing right now. You basically get the gist of it. Maybe a dub song. Rob, who's your mean boy number one?
Mean boy number one, Kevin Martin on the Oklahoma City Zombie Stars.
All right, tell me why you think. Where's his regression coming?
3-point field goal percentage. He is a career 38% shooter, and right now he's sitting at 44%. And I think that a lot of people would disagree with me initially, because you would think, okay, he's on a much better team than he's been on in a long time. You know, he's coming off the bench. He's getting fewer minutes. So, you know, and he's got guys like Kevin Durant and Westbrook who are getting all of this attention that, you know, he might find himself a little more open. But despite his minutes going slightly down, he's at 29 minutes a game this year. He hasn't had under 30 since his second year in the league in 2005.
Mm.
He is still taking five three-point attempts a game, which is right about where he's been at his career. So he's taking more shots in fewer minutes, but like I said, because of the team, I think teams are focusing a little less on him. But I think that since he hasn't shot over 40% since 2008, I think he's going to regress to about there, about 40%.
Okay.
I think teams notice, you know, how effective he is right now.
Yep.
And, you know, when he's on the court, he's on there to score.
Yep.
Because they generally have two guys on the court that are just not scorers at all. I know Kevin Durant can win a game by himself, but
when he's out there with Durant and Westbrook, though, it's awfully hard to stop him from scoring. It certainly can't be a priority of yours. And he's certainly a talented enough scorer that with the limited attention he's getting in those scenarios, he is pretty efficient, right? I mean,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I just think that, you know, it's a specific case where he will come down, both because other defenses will pay a little more attention to him, and because I think he's just shooting lights out. He's having his best season, his best
sure.
year. In terms of 3-point percentage,
he's got to come back down to earth.
In a regular season game, I might think that your best bet would be to hope that Westbrook will shoot the Thunder out of the game, rather than, you know, try to play those two guys hard up. And cross
I'm
your
not,
fingers.
I'm not asking them to pay more attention to Kevin Martin than Russell Westbrook. I'm just saying I think he will regress to the mean.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. It's coming through loud
it's
and clear, brother.
Bet.
I also agree, Manziel. The best way to beat the Thunder is to have Westbrook have a bad game.
Yeah, yeah.
Over Durant.
Well, you know, that's the kind of wishing that the Spurs had last season and didn't work out for them. I have a couple of things I'd like to talk about with respect to regression to the mean. One of the things you hear tossed around a lot at this time of year is that the Knicks are going to regress to the mean. I mean, in a large part, they already have regressed to the mean. They were shooting around 40% in three-point percentage earlier this season, and they're down to 381, which is still good. I think it may drop a little, but I don't see any of these three-point percentages as being totally unreasonable. J.R. Smith's at 340, Carmelo's at 405, Steve Novak's at 447, Pablo Prigioni is at 408. You know, none of these guys, the rest of these guys are right where they should be. Ronnie Brewer's at 310.
Well, Pablo Prigioni is a better three-point shooter than Carmelo. That's what we can infer from these
players.
We can infer that Pablo Prigioni gets a lot more open looks behind the arc than Carmelo Anthony does or ever will.
Oh, so the stats are lying.
Stats are telling the truth. He has the truth is he has a higher 3-point percentage than Carmelo Anthony, but that does not stand for the proposition that he's better at shooting 3-pointers. Although, you know, he's a damn good 3-point shooter, as we're seeing. So
that's a ball stat.
I wonder how much it's going to drop. I wouldn't be surprised to see it drop, but I think it's regressed about where it's going to regress. That's mine. Menzel, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I look back at a guy who, Rob, I think you scouted him early in the season, early in our podcasting days, Taj Gibson. And I remember at the time I noted that, you know, the career 65% free throw shooting Gibson had upped his rate in November, December to 80%. And I said, wow, it's rare you see a guy, you know, improve his skill that much. I didn't even think twice about the fact that that might not represent his true skill level. But I do see that since the new year has turned, he's back to shooting 52% since then. And on the season, he is now a 66% free throw shooter compared to his 65% career average. So this is a very classic regression to the mean. He was way ahead of his regular career level, and now he's right back at his career level. And in fact, this month in February, he's a woeful 1-for-9, which small sample size, but it's still hard to find an NBA player to go 1-for-9.
Mm. How many free throws does he take a game?
Per game, Taj Gibson is taking about 2 per game.
Okay.
See, from my point of view, when I hear that, I mean, 1-for-9 is atrocious, and it's definitely not just random. But it's also not that significant in terms of pure numbers or sort of sample size. I mean, I see that as it's got to be something physical more than anything else. I mean, maybe one of his fingers is hurting him. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to do a quick Google search for Taj Gibson injury. Didn't he hurt his finger last year?
Maybe 6 of those were in Denver. He let the altitude get to him.
Yeah,
maybe that's it. He just doesn't know how to shoot in altitude.
Yeah. Chris Brandon Brown has that problem. I can make fun of him because he's not here.
Breaking news, guys. I don't know if you can hear the click-clack of the teletype coming through. I am here at the Trade Center. I've got a facsimile machine. I've got a teletype. I have a Commodore 64, so I'm all ready for all the breaking news. And right now what I have to tell you is that the the Sacramento Kings traded first round. He was number five in the NBA draft this year, Thomas Robinson, who was not seeing a lot of time this year. They traded him to the Rockets along with Tyler Honeycutt and Francisco Garcia for Patrick Patterson, Tony Douglas, and Cole Aldrich. It saves the Kings almost $4 million in salary this year. I'm hearing no.
That's right. I'm so upset with the trade.
Oh, he's upset. Sorry. Okay. All right. I thought you were done. I thought you were.
I couldn't hold it in any longer.
Well, Rob, go ahead. Tell me why you're upset with the trade. I mean, you're upset with the trade as from the point of view of someone who's thinks that this is their team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this trade, they are giving up one of their best prospects, you know, a fifth overall pick, who is young and very effective, and they're getting nothing for it. The only thing they're doing is losing some cap space. Now, I understand cap space is helpful, but when you're paying a guy at the league minimum who has a lot of potential because he's, you know, he's fresh out of college, I don't understand why you would trade him in a team that needs to rebuild and is losing. They don't even losing him isn't helping them tank to get a lottery pick. They're already lottery pick central.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not even playing him enough minutes.
Right, it's not going to have a big effect on their lottery chances one way or the other.
Yeah, and Keith Stupid has just done a terrible job.
I see what you did there. For our listeners, the coach's name is Keith Smart. Rob has switched that up to Keith Stupid, and you know what? It's hard to argue with, although I certainly think it's mean, and I apologize to Keith and his family. I'm sorry, Rob, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm sticking with Keith Stupid on this one. I mean, how do you not play your fifth overall pick more minutes when he's playing well? You're already losing. You're down 20 points in the first quarter every game. You know, this is a guy that you, like, can possibly build a franchise around. Now, he's not a franchise player. Not now, nor do I think he will be. But he is good enough to be a very effective player who, you know, yes, they, you know, they're gaining, you said it was $4 million, I think, in cap space. But the amount...
I mean, they're shedding salary. It's not just space. They're actually shedding $4 million in salary. So it's a salary dump, and it's a dump of... I mean, Menzel, you'd agree that it's at least a nice thing to get rid of that Francisco Garcia contract, would you say?
Well, sort of. You know, I'm looking at the contract figures for both teams right now, so just to give everyone a hint. We talked about Francisco Garcia a few weeks back when we were doing our Sonics/Kings preview. Garcia is on a bloated contract, $6 million plus per year. However, next year he's on a team option. So, you know, he's not a guy you're carrying forward into 2013, 2014. Thomas Robinson, like we said, is on a rookie minimum contract, which is quite a bit bigger than a minimum contract. And then the third guy they put in this, Tyler Honeycutt, is on the absolute minimum contract, less than $1 million per year. The guys they're getting back, Patrick Patterson is due $3 million for next season. Tony Douglas is expiring. And the third player, Cole Aldrich, is also expiring on his rookie deal. So it doesn't really look like they're not. It is a salary dump in some extent, but it's not one of these classic salary dumps where they're freeing up cap space for years to come. My only suspicion, now that I look at these right now, is that perhaps there's another trade coming down which is going to require a little more cap room. Sacramento was under the cap. Kind of at the moment before this trade by just $100,000, basically. Mm-hmm. I can't find a really good rationalization for any of these three guys they traded because two of them are expiring anyway. They're out the door. The third, Patrick Patterson, I guess, is an all right player.
No,
but he's not a guy that I would trade Thomas Robinson.
No, I mean, he certainly doesn't have that upside. I mean, I like your suggestion that it must be in preparation for another move, and certainly I think it's entirely possible that by the time this episode is edited and released, that Tyreek or DeMarcus or some combination of those guys will be playing for someone else. I'm intrigued by the idea of Tyreek going to Golden State and being defensively molded by Mark Jackson. That might be a pipe dream, but... It's something I'm interested in seeing.
So what do you think, Josh Smith's coming over? I'm so confused.
Josh Smith. No, no. I'm saying some kind of deal that involves Klay Thompson and Tyreek Evans and some. It's a pipe dream. I told you, it's a pipe dream. I long for a place where Tyreek's skills can be put to good use.
Right. Well, he'll move to Seattle, then, and we'll take care of that.
I sure hope so, buddy.
Me too. Yeah. So will Patrick Patterson, Cole Aldrich. God dang it, this is just stupid.
Did they rehire Wally Walker and Artie's GM?
We're so close. Just so close.
Guys, don't worry. There's gonna be a purge when this team gets to Seattle. Not of the players, of the guys that are making these decisions. All right.
That's some of the players too.
Really. That's right. There will be a slight player purge as well. Double P, Rob. Here we are. We're past midseason. This All-Star break is a little late in the season, but we're past midseason. We started out the year, probably not many people have heard it, but we did, I think, a series of episodes about picking over-unders for the season. Can you kind of break down for us how we did picking the over-unders? Now, this is based on what the teams are on pace for right now.
Yes, that is correct. So, you know, we're a little further than halfway through the season. It's about two-thirds, I guess, now.
Almost.
Is it really? Wow.
Yeah, it's almost two-thirds.
Time flies when you're not watching any games, Menzel.
you know, before the season, we did our predictions, and I would like to say that I'm leading the teardrop runners with 20 out of 30 correct if the season were to end today.
How much money did you make?
I am also leading the teardrop runners in the biggest bonehead decision by taking the over with the Los Angeles Lakers. So, you know, you give and take here. But right now I'm at 20 out of 30.
You take the good, you take the bad.
Scott's at 18 out of 30. Chris Brownie Brown's at 17 out of 30. So we're all above 500. And then there's that Manziel kid who is 14 out of 30. And he's losing money as we speak.
Now, of course, this is only based on what the projection is. So as I look at these, there are some that are projected to be over or projected to be under that might not be. Rob, are there any that jump out at you here as you look at it that look like the projection's unlikely to come out the way it's projected?
Absolutely.
Share it with me, Rob.
Indiana Pacers, my friend.
All right. Why is that?
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Right now, they're projected at 49.5. The Vegas odds have had them at 51.5. They're definitely going over. They have Granger coming back. They just spanked the bum-ass Knicks. They were up by 30 at halftime. They're now half a game out of that two spot in the Eastern Conference. They are a force to be reckoned with. And if Granger is even close to game shape and can just contribute a little bit, they are going to end on a really good streak and, they are going to finish over, even though they are currently sitting the under. And I did take them over before the season, and I look forward to cashing in on that bet as well.
Well, the only one that took the under was Chris. That was one of his many incorrect rogue picks. I'm sorry, Chris, you're not here to defend yourself. Now, Rob, also Jason Whitlock endorsed the Indiana Pacers as the team in the East most likely to beat the Heat, which is to say, of all the teams that are not going to beat the Heat, which one has the best shot? Coming closest to almost.
Well, they're 2-0 against the Heat so far this season. They rebound well and they play really good defense. So that's, you know, if somebody were to beat Miami, that's it, because they don't rebound very well. And you know, if somebody can contain LeBron for, you know, a couple of games,
it's a big if.
Which they did. They were up 2-1 last year, and they've just gotten older and better. And Paul George has emerged from like a decent player to a superstar.
Unfortunately, another guy that got older and better is LeBron James. And actually Chris Bosh, who was missing for a big part of that series. But, you know.
Which they won.
Which they won, obviously. But I agree with you. Indiana is certainly looking, especially after that dreadful start, like they're going to turn things around and probably be over that pace that they're on right now for 49.5 wins.
Also, congrats to them. Their offense is coming around even before Granger. I think this is their 11th straight game over 100 points.
Yeah, Paul George has really been turning it on.
How's Roy Hibbert looking? Has he come around yet?
Defensively, yes. Offensively, not always there.
All right.
I've got one I think that's also a little off. before the season, the over-under on the Milwaukee Bucks was 36.5. They're on pace for 41 wins, which is over, despite the fact that all four of us picked the under. And I'm going to back us here on the under. Although the post-Skiles era has been somewhat successful in Milwaukee, I just see this as a disaster. The fact that this team is trying to trade for Josh Smith just shows to the extent to which this franchise is in disarray. And I think you can expect a full tank job, especially since one of their two guys that's kind of playing for a contract is bound to be gone. I think either Ellis or Jennings is probably soon to be gone. So I think Milwaukee, though on pace for 41, is still comfortably under 36.5.
So Milwaukee's at 500 right now. They're holding on to the last spot in the East in the playoffs. While a tank job is probably in their best interests, you know, what team is going to come up and take that spot from them?
I think Detroit's a strong candidate for that right now.
And they're six games back. Detroit's six games back.
I agree, but
Brandon Knight just got injured.
What's that?
Brandon Knight just got injured.
What's the status of that? I mean, I'm not too worried about that. I really see this Milwaukee team as a mirage, and I see Detroit as a team that is going to become more and more dominant as the season becomes closer and closer, and is a team that, frankly, you wouldn't want to play in the playoffs. Not that you're going to lose to them, but it's going to be unpleasant along the way. So that's also my bold prediction. Those are my thoughts. Menzel, what do you think?
I want to say a little something.
Please. Oh, I'm sorry, Rob. Say something.
I just disagree with you. I don't think that they will. You know, they're already five games over their pace of 41.5, which is basically a 500. Wait, that's not true.
41 is a 500 record.
Yeah. No, they're at four, yeah. They're on pace for 41, but their over-under was set at 36.5. Sorry about that.
Yes.
I think that, you know, the fact that they get to play four teams that have only won 16 games this year so far, Cleveland, Washington, Orlando, Charlotte, you know, maybe after looking at their schedule and seeing how many games they've left against them, back it up with a little more facts. But the East is brutal. Rondo's hurt. You know, Atlanta's looking kind of bad. They're also going to get rid of Josh Smith likely the next 24 hours. I don't know. D Rose out. The East is kind of ugly.
I don't disagree with you. I just don't see the Milwaukee Bucks as, you know, I don't think they're playing 500 ball the rest of the way.
It's a win-win for me because I had the under. So
we all had the under, my friend. We all had the under. Menzel, what about you? Is there anybody here that pops out at you?
Yeah, you know, well, my favorite team, obviously, the Blazers, mm-hmm. who, you know, despite a very strong start and a near 500 record, which was well above even kind of optimistic projections for them, you know, what I see is in their record, they have a negative scoring differential. you know, they're getting outscored on average by 3 points per game, and their record is starting to round into that shape. So additionally, they've been struggling as late. They didn't beat Orlando. They didn't beat a few teams that are kind of right around their level or worse, like the Suns the other night.
They've lost six in a row.
And with any luck, I think this is the way to go for them, is they need to trade J.J. Hickson, who has been a little bit of a revelation for them, and they don't have anyone behind him to take a spot when he does get traded. You know, and so this is another team that should try to tank if they can.
Yeah, this is a team with no bench at all. Lillard's playing over 40 minutes. God bless
him.
Rookie of the year. Congrats to him. Unless he gets hurt, it's over. No offense to Anthony Davis. It's just,
no, I agree.
It's not
I agree
close
with that.
Right now in my mind.
I didn't know Anthony Davis even played in the NBA anymore.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Well,
man. Come
not
on.
All of us are watching the Hornets.
Yeah. They were on national TV tonight.
Oh, sniggity snap. Portland lost their last six. They're, you know, 3-7 their last 10. But, Manziel, you picked a bad year to watch fewer Blazers games because they do this crazy thing where they're up 20 or down 20, and it always ends in the last 2 minutes of the game. The game's tied.
Well, they are a classic puncher's chance, shooter's chance type team, as will be discussed in your Sloan Sports article.
Excellent. Look forward to that.
All right, guys. Well, why don't we wrap it up here? This is a little mini episode since Dr. Brown is gone. But we're going to wrap it up here by each making a bold prediction for the second half of the season here. Rob, would you like to start us off?
Not really.
Oh, you wouldn't.
But I can.
All right, I will. I predict that Denver will make it to the Western Conference Finals. That's my bold prediction. I just think that they have a lot of guys that are going to be peaking at the right time. With Danilo shooting the way he is, they're pretty hard to beat, and that's with Iguodala not playing very well on offense. If Iguodala starts to heat up on offense as we approach the playoffs, that's going to be a difficult team to beat. So that's my prediction, and you know that's partly just love of George Karl and love of watching them. But I see them getting there or getting close to it. Now, right now, if they were going to do that, they'd have to go through the Clippers in the first round, which would be tough, but I'm still picking it because I'm crazy.
I'm showing
Denver is matched up against Memphis right now.
You're not wrong about that. I was wrong. Denver's matched up against Memphis, and I think they beat Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis and San Antonio, and that's actually probably the best road for them to avoid Oak City and Clippers, I think.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Nobody wants to play San Antonio. No offense.
Nobody wants to play a lot of these teams.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's shocking how much better the West is.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, here's my bold prediction is, you know, despite being four games currently out of the playoffs, that the Lakers will make the playoffs.
Oh, man. And you had to bring up the Lakers.
You stole my
I'm not done.
Y'all were both – we're going to end this show by predicting a Lakers playoff run. That's hurtful to me personally.
The Lakers are going to win their first series.
Except unless it's against OKC.
Oh, my
goodness. Yeah, if it's not OKC.
Oh, my
good call.
Goodness
good
gracious.
Good save. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think the Illuminati can let that happen, guys. Illuminati, if you're listening, please don't let that happen. So, all right, guys. That's it for now. Great show. Good job.
Manziel made a prediction?
Well,
he's predicting
the Lakers were going to the playoffs.
I'm going to predict that Chicago will overtake Brooklyn for the fourth spot. D Rose will come back. They will give Miami six games in the second round. How's that?
I like it. I like it. I love it.
That's fair.
All right. Well,
I think they'll probably be in the. Oh yeah, they can't be in the three spot because Indiana's in their division. Okay, fair.
Yeah. I mean, they're not that far off from Indiana, but I do think that Indiana is getting better and improving. So,
yes, sir, Bob. All right.
Cool, guys. Well, let's all say goodnight.
Good night.
Adios, amigos.
And until next time, save us a seat at the next Sonics game.
Goodbye.